Hello, all you out there in Radioland. This is KPTZ Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. And for our virtual listeners, we hope you stay glued to kptz.org. Our website is more than just a way to listen to today's shows. For example, you can find the biographies of all of our hosts and DJs. You can look up calendar listings to see what's happening around town. And you can sample some of our earlier shows. In fact, much of the original programming on KPTZ is currently available as a podcast. You know, double your listening pleasure, listening to today's show as well as some earlier ones. I'm Maryam McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see around town? Who is the guy scuba diving at Point Hudson, very close to a shiny seal? Shouldn't he have a diving partner? And who are those teenagers who look like they've been issued uniforms, but you know it's just the leader of the pack style, they all dress alike. Then there's the old guys who refuse to recognize there's a fall chill in the air. They're going to keep wearing their shorts and Hawaiian shirts until ice or snow makes the town into a winter wonderland. This show, Our Town, profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work in Jefferson County. We talk with the people who make up the eclectic mix around these parts. We talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca, right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and baristas, the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, the otters, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. Today, my guest is Bob Saring, who's the club manager at the American Legion. He's also the captain of the Honor Guard. So he's in charge of the haunting ceremony that accompanies the memorial for our fallen veterans. But unless you're a club member, you probably don't know Bob. But most of you are well aware of the Marvin Shield Post number 26 right down there on Water Street, just across from the Maritime Center. So welcome to the show, Bob.
Thank you.
I always like to start off with the obvious. Are you a local boy, born and bred in Port Townsend?
No. I moved here about 14 years ago. I'm originally from Pennsylvania.
Where in Pennsylvania?
A small town just outside of Philadelphia. It's called Feasterville.
You went to high school there, I presume.
I did.
Okay, here's a question. Teenage kids, they gossip about each other, and they always say, he's a jock, she's a nerd. What do you think they said about you, not what you thought about yourself?
I was more or less in the out crowd, the crowd that didn't have a crowd. So just a general misfit.
Yeah, out with the out crowd, huh?
Right.
So were you one of these kids who had it in his mind exactly what you wanted to do when you graduated from high school?
No, not at all. I had thoughts of college. I had thoughts of the military. I ran the gamut.
Huh. So how did you make up your mind?
I actually made my mind up to not join the military and go to college. And I woke up one day and I had an appointment to see the Army recruiter. And I said to my mother that I was going to go and tell him that I wasn't going to join and I was going to go to college. Mm-hmm. And I did. And then I drove out to the Marine Corps recruiter. And I'll never forget his name, Staff Sergeant Dodge. I explained to him that I wanted to go to college and I wasn't interested in joining the Marines. And he said to me, okay. He said, well, I'll tell you what, sit here a minute and I'll be right back. And he stepped away and he came back and he said, Top wants to see you. Top is the Master Sergeant in charge of the recruiting center. Mm-hmm. I went in and talked to the Master Sergeant and 15 minutes later, I was signing up for the Marines.
He must have been a hell of a convincing guy.
He was persuasive.
Well, what did he say to you that sort of tipped it?
You know, he more or less just gave me the spiel about life in the Marines and what it could do for me education-wise and so forth, and I just fell under the spell.
So you went home and told your parents, well, I signed up.
Well, at that time I was 17, so I actually went home and told my mother that she needed to sign for me because I was too young to join on my own. And she looked at me and she said, well, this morning you left and you weren't going to join. I said, well, changed my mind.
And they were okay with it?
They were fine. They were absolutely fine with it. My mother had 9 brothers. All of them served in either World War II or Korea.
Wow. So it's a military family, I guess.
Yes. My father was also in the Army in World War II.
Were any of them in the Marines, or were they all in
A few Army? Of my uncles were in the Marines, but they represented all branches.
I see. Did you consult with any of your uncles about the Marines specifically, or was...
No, all of my uncles, actually, the family sort of spread out from Pennsylvania years before. I did have one uncle from New Jersey who was a Marine, and he was quite happy about it.
That's great. I understand becoming a Marine is sort of a tough road, and that the boot camp experience can be quite arduous. Can you tell us a little bit about it, what it was like?
It was the hardest thing I'd ever done up until then. It was hot, it was flat, it was...
Where were you for the trip?
Paris Island, South Carolina, which is the birthplace of the Marines. There's 2 boot camps for Marines, one's in Paris Island and one's in San Diego. But any Marine that went to Paris Island, that's the birthplace of the Marines.
Okay, and so what's tough about it? Describe it a little bit.
Everything about your life changes. You're no longer a high school kid that gets up and watches TV on the weekends. It's work constantly. You're told where to go, when to go, what to eat, when to eat, how to eat. It's just an incredible change in your life. And plus, there's some physical.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to ask.
Yeah, there's a little bit of physical work to it,
yeah,
also.
Yeah, isn't it like obstacle courses and all sorts of exercises?
There is. I didn't really find that very hard, though. That was almost a game. The hard part was when you were in the barracks cleaning or when you were out running 5 miles in the morning. It was the physical training that I found most difficult.
And do most guys, these days also women, but most people who enter, do they make it through, or there's a lot of dropping off?
There's, I'd say, a fair amount of drop-off. My platoon started at, I believe it was around 72, 76, something like that. And when we graduated, we were probably at about 60. Hmm. But that's with being replenished from people that were held back from other platoons.
Okay. And so what happened after basic training? Where'd you go?
After basic training, I went to Millington, Memphis in Tennessee. It's a naval air station. When I joined the Marines, I joined to join the air wing, air crew, aircraft maintenance, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. One of the things my recruiter told me was that the aircraft is basically a big computer, and I was interested in computers, and he said computer maintenance is a great job to go into. Mm-hmm. I thought, okay, great. So I went to Memphis and studied there for about 6 months, and I found out that the job that I was assigned had nothing to do with computers. It was more electrical work, electrical repair. I also found out I wasn't very good at math.
Oops.
Yeah. Not good for that kind of work. So I basically failed out of that school and then went on to my next duty station, which was in North Carolina, Camp Lejeune.
And what'd you do there?
Well, I was a cook. Let's see, when I got to Camp Lejeune, I remember there was another Marine with me, and we both failed out of Memphis at the same time. And I knew who he was. I didn't know him very well, but we both ended up at Camp Lejeune at the same time. And I remember standing in front of a sergeant, and he had told us that because of the length of time that we had put in so far, we were limited as to what we could do for our secondary MOS. And he said to us, "Boys, I'll tell you, you have a choice. You could either be a cook or you could be a grunt."
Hmm.
And a grunt's an infantryman.
Yes.
This was back in 83 when Lebanon was heating up. And I remember I looked at the guy next to me and he looked at me and we both turned and said, "Cook."
Cook.
So I became a cook.
Okay. In the Marines, what kind of food do you cook?
Actually, it was quite good.
Interesting.
I was surprised, you know, growing up, hearing from my uncles and my father about the food during the war. I really wasn't expecting great cuisine, but it was a good variety and it was good food. A great breakfast. It was a big buffet breakfast. Lunch, you could have a sandwich, you could have an entree, whatever you'd like.
Hmm.
They had desserts. They had unlimited soda.
So I guess you're talking about a facility that had hundreds, if not thousands, of Marines there, right?
We probably fed about 1,000 a day.
Wow, that's a lot. How many cooks were doing that?
We usually had about 10 on a shift.
Wow. Did you have to clean up, too?
We cleaned up what we cooked.
Okay.
But they also had another crew. One nice thing about being a cook in the Marines is that you didn't have KP, kitchen patrol.
Well,
every other Marine would be assigned to a chow hall for up to about 2 weeks a year, and their job was to do what nobody else wanted to do.
Yeah.
So they were always stuck cleaning up. They were in the scullery, the dish room.
That doesn't sound like fun to me.
No.
Okay, so how long was your stint? How long were you in the Marines?
I was in for 4 years. After that, I got a job in Philadelphia at the Barclay Hotel. I got out, I was looking for work, and my brother worked at a hotel, and he said, well, they're hiring there. And I went in, got a job as a busboy in the restaurant.
Right.
And I started out doing that and stayed with it and then became a waiter. And eventually I ended up being the restaurant manager.
Now, I've heard of that hotel. I think it's a pretty nice hotel.
It was one of the grand dames of Philadelphia. There was the Barclay, there was the Bellevue, to a lesser degree, the Warwick. Those were the old classic hotels.
So was the restaurant one of those sort of fancy, dressy kind of restaurants?
Oh, it was. Absolutely. Yeah.
Linen tablecloth.
Tuxedo.
Tuxedo. Wow. Do you see any stars there?
Actually, I did. Joan Rivers, Santana, Patty Duke, Bob Hope would visit occasionally. I never saw him in the restaurant, but his lawyer lived there.
So there were quite a few people through there. So how many years were you there? Seven, did you say?
I was there about 7 years.
And then what happened?
An old boss of mine moved to Washington, D.C., and he came up and asked me if I'd be interested in moving. And I thought, you know what, why not? So I went down to D.C., worked at the DuPont Plaza there.
Now, again, that's a pretty swank hotel.
It's a fairly well-known hotel. It's been around since the early 40s. Actually, it's now closed. It's now another hotel. But it was more of a business hotel than a posh. It wasn't the Willard or one of those hotels.
Okay. Yeah. So there weren't that many politicians around, or were there?
Oh, no. I would see them now and again. George Stephanopoulos lived across the street, so I'd see him quite a bit. Different politicians would come in for different events there.
Mm-hmm. And what were you doing when you were there? What was your job?
Originally, I started as the assistant food and beverage director, and when I left, I was the director of catering.
And when you left, where did you head next?
I got a job with the Aramark Corporation. They had a contract to run the conference center at the Gallaudet University.
Now, explain to us what that university is.
The Gallaudet University is the only deaf university in the United States.
Wow.
So all of the students and most of the staff are deaf. Nowadays, there are some hearing students, but when I was there, they were all either deaf or hard of hearing.
Well, you're not deaf. Did you have to learn how to sign?
We did. It was required with the job. And really, a lot of my clients were deaf. So it was sort of necessary.
Was it easy to learn?
At first, it was very difficult. I had a very hard time translating with my eyes. Your whole life, you're used to hearing, and your brain just automatically knows what's being said, but you have to relearn and read with your eyes. And that was difficult at first. And then one day it was like switching a light switch. I just got it. And then from there on, I was able to pick up different phrases, different words. For example, in a hotel, there's some very specific signs that you would need to learn. Just things like the sign for hotel, kind of make a flag with your fingers. Things like that. So from there, I was able to pick up words fairly quickly.
Yeah, and there would be specific things like, where's the check-in?
Exactly.
Everyone in a hotel has certain common things that they would say. So how many years were you there?
Actually, I worked there twice. I worked there for a while under Aramark, and then I was transferred to New York, where I worked for a private hotel under Aramark. And then I went back to D.C. and went back to Gallaudet. So I worked there for 8 years, 7 years.
Wow. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. This show is called Our Town. I'm your host, Maryam McNellis. Our Town features some of the individuals that make up the fabric of Jefferson County. My guest today is Bob Saring, who's the club manager at the American Legion Post in downtown Port Townsend. Bob was just telling me about his experiences first in the Marines and then working in the hotel industry, mainly on the East Coast. But obviously, he ended up out here on the West Coast. So, Bob, how did you make it from Philadelphia, New York, Washington, D.C., to the Pacific Northwest?
Well, as I said, I worked for the Gallaudet University at the Conference Center, and the company at that point had changed from Aramark to a company called Guest Services Incorporated. And they had managing contracts mainly in the D.C., Virginia area, but also at Mount Rainier National Park. So when the contract expired at Gallaudet, my vice president asked me if I would come out to Mount Rainier for about a month to help out with a project they had. So I went out there for a month and then came back and was making plans to move back to Philadelphia. And I got a call from the vice president again, and he said, well, they want you to come back out to Washington State. And so I thought about it, and I thought, okay, it's time for a move. So I took the job, and I was out at Mount Rainier. I was the manager of the National Park Inn.
Sounds great.
It was a lot of fun for the short term. Visiting Mount Rainier National Park is fantastic. There's hiking and all kinds of things to do. But living there is kind of a different story. It's kind of remote.
Yeah, sort of isolated. I can see that.
Right. So I was there for about 3 months. They also had the contract here in Port Townsend at Fort Worden for the food service. And after about 3 months, they asked me if I would come out here and take over the food service operation. And I was a little bit on the fence about it, but I decided to stay and take it.
Mm-hmm. So you moved to Port Townsend then?
So then I moved to Port Townsend. I've been here since.
And what year was that when you first moved here?
That was 2004, I believe.
Wow. Well, a lot of people I talk to, when they first come to Port Townsend, they sort of fall in love, but they don't, it's hard to get a job, but you're a rarity. You had a job when you got here.
Right.
That's really remarkable. Did you live at Fort Worden at the beginning?
No. For a few months, I stayed at a hotel, and then I found a place here in town.
Okay, and you were at Fort Worden for how long, roughly?
I was there for about 4 years.
And what happened next?
Well, the contract expired again, the management contract, and the company decided not to bid on the new contract.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I had a couple of options, but they would all involve leaving here. And frankly, I fell in love with the town by then, so I found work up at the Menresa Castle.
Great. And you were there for a while?
I was there for, yes, again, about 7 years.
It seems to be a pattern with you. Seven years is your...
It seems to be a lucky number.
Yeah, okay. Well, now you're at the American Legion post. How did that happen?
When I first came to town, I started visiting the American Legion, and at that time, I was not a member. I would go there occasionally. I would play pool. I joined the local pool league, and there was a team out of the American Legion, so I started going more frequently. And then we had a commander there who one day was talking to me. He was telling me the membership was down, we're looking for more members, and I said to him, well, you know, I served, and I told him the years I had served, and he said, well, you would qualify for membership, and I said, okay, well, let me sign up. And I signed up and became an official Legionnaire. That was 9 years ago.
Most of our listeners know about the American Legion, but they're sort of aware of it on the edges of their mind, but they don't necessarily know what it is or how big it is or anything. Can you just give us a little capsule of the history of the American Legion?
Sure. The American Legion was founded in 1919 by vets of World War I. And there was a concern about all of these vets returning home, and they were coming back with all of the baggage of the war, the stress, the depression. So they formed the American Legion basically as a group that would help veterans out from World War I. And then it grew over time. With World War II is when it reached its peak as far as membership. They had around 4 million members.
Well, it's not just in the United States, right?
No. As a matter of fact, the original post one of the American Legion is in Paris, France. It was actually founded in Paris.
Wow. So how many posts are there worldwide today?
Currently, there are 14,000 posts.
Wow.
In, I believe, 200 countries.
And in Washington State, how many are there roughly?
Probably 100, mm-hmm. I would say, roughly.
I know that the post here is number 26, so that means it's pretty old, right?
Right. The posts are numbered in order of when they were formed. So post 1 in Washington State's in Seattle. We're post 26. We were founded in the early 20s.
Okay. And roughly how many members do you have today?
We have about 350 Legionnaires, and then we also have two other organizations that are within our family. We've got the Sons of the American Legion, and they've got about 50 members, and then we also have the American Legion Auxiliary, and they've got about 50 members.
But you also told me the other day that there's a new member of the family, if you want to call it that, the motorcycle
yes.
branch,
our,
right?
Our,
what
our,
are they called?
Our biker gang, the American Legion Riders. They're primarily Vietnam veterans, but they are open to any of the American Legion family who enjoy riding motorcycles.
Does Port Townsend have a branch of that one?
They don't.
Don't.
We've had a couple of members that were interested in starting one up, but then we told them that they'd have to have meetings. And they decided
meetings? What?
Yeah, that was the mistake.
That's funny. That's really funny. I'd like to talk a lot about the different things that the American Legion does, but I know one of the things, or maybe the thing that's closest to your heart, is the Honor Guard. And can you explain to our listeners exactly what the Honor Guard is?
Absolutely. Prior to 2000, when a veteran would pass away, the military, whatever branch of service that veteran served in, would send out an honor guard, and that would consist of the rifle squad, a bugle player, and two people to fold and present the American flag. In the year 2000, Congress voted to stop that in an effort to save money for whatever reason. Immediately, veterans organizations and the public in general were not happy about it. So Congress came back and said, okay, well, what we will do is at any funeral, we'll send two members out to fold and present the flag, and we'll play a recording of taps. That didn't sit well with the VFW, the American Legion, all of the veterans groups. So at that point, we decided we'll step in, and if the military won't do it, we will. So what we do is we will perform a three-volley rifle salute. It's not a 21-gun salute. We'll have a live bugler play taps, and then we have two members that will fold and present the flag to the next of kin.
Now, if I'm correct, you don't have to be a member of the American Legion to have this done.
No, it's open to any veteran who did not receive a dishonorable discharge.
Okay, so if a family member called you up after their father died and he served in the service, you would accommodate that?
Absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. We do it free of charge. We take care of our own expenses. The only requirement that we have is that I need the discharge papers of the deceased and the certificate of death. And I only need that so that I could take it to the post office and get a flag.
So roughly how many memorial services does your post do per year?
On average, we do between 12 and 15.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a shame. I know there's a lot more veterans out there.
And yeah, I'm sure there are, and I bet you a lot of their families don't know about this.
Well, hopefully this will change
well,
that.
Maybe the show will help. And you also told me there's another thing that I bet most families don't know about. Jefferson County, there's a $500... Explain that.
Yes, it is. I hate to use the word benefit, but it's a death benefit. Any veteran who has lived in Jefferson County for 1 year, I believe it is, their next of kin is eligible for $500. And all they have to do is go up to the county courthouse, and they fill some paperwork out. They have to have, again, the DD-214, the certificate of death, and they will issue you a check.
Mm-hmm. Well, that could help a lot of people.
It does. It helps a lot with burial costs and so forth.
Exactly. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other activities of the post. Obviously, there's the aspect of it being a club, and you've got a pool table and a bar and all of that. But there's a lot of other things that happen that I think people aren't that aware of. Can you talk a little bit about some of them?
Sure. Like I said, our primary goal is to help out fellow vets.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the American Legion was founded, and to this day, that's what we do. Aside from just the club itself being a gathering place for veterans, we have a Veterans Assistance Fund that is specific to our post. Now, the county has a Veterans Assistance Fund, and then there's the VA, but there's a lot of things that fall through the cracks with that, so that's where we step in and help out. And we've done things simple as helping with gas money, helping with ferry fares. We've partnered with the Boeing Bluebills, who are a group of retired Boeing employees, and we've helped them build ramps for wheelchairs. We helped one veteran out. He was a Marine veteran. His service dog needed surgery. So there was a number of posts, actually, that pitched in and helped him out to get the surgery done.
Wow. Now, there are a couple of other things that the post does, like there are scholarships.
There is. We have a scholarship program where every year we offer 3 scholarships to local high school and even homeschooled students to go to either college or some sort of technical school.
I've noticed that a number of other groups have events at the Legion Post, like the Kinetic Sculpture, R2AK. How does that work?
Because we're a nonprofit organization, we are only allowed to rent the hall out so many times a year. However, we are also allowed to rent out the hall as a member-sponsored event so many more times a year. So what will happen in the case of the Kinetic Sculpture Race, that's actually sponsored by a member of our auxiliary. So that becomes a different type of event.
Yeah, I can see that.
With the Race to Alaska, that's one of those that we're basically helping out another nonprofit, and we're allowed to do that.
There are one or two more things I'd just like to ask you. I've been to the post a few times. I've noticed that most of the members appear to be older. How do you attract younger members?
Present company exempted, of course.
Of course.
You know, that's a challenge that the American Legion has worldwide. There always seems to be difficulty getting younger people to join us. Even at our post, we are trying to form up a membership committee to address that. There are so many veterans now coming out of Iraq and Afghanistan, and a lot of them could use our help or at least our camaraderie,
yeah.
But they're not quite ready to join up. A lot of the older members talk about the 10-year lag with veterans where after they get out of the service, for about 10 years, they don't want to have anything to do with anything with the military. But then after a while, they start thinking about it and they start looking for that companionship.
Well, I would like to encourage them to come down and visit you guys because I think a lot of good there. One last question, which is, tell me, what do you like best about Port Townsend or what do you like about living here?
Oh, I like the scenery. I like going to Safeway and having 5 people know me. I like walking down the street and seeing a stranger and saying hello. You know, most of my adult life, I lived in cities back east. And it's just, it's nice being in a small town, very similar to the town I grew up in when I was a kid.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being a guest on the show.
Well, thank you.
Bob, you've been a great guest. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. My guest today has been Bob Saring, who's the captain of the Honor Guard and the club manager at the American Legion Post in downtown Port Townsend. Thank you, Bob. And I also want to thank my partner, John McPherson. He's the engineer of the show and sits in the control booth. He makes me and my guests sound so polished. And thanks to program director Larry Stein and our chairman Robert Ambrose. Meanwhile, all of you out there in Radioland, keep listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.